And we have a pretty full agenda, so we're going to go ahead and get rolling. We have two bills that we have Representative Butler here for, so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3072. And Representative Butler, would you come forward, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Today I've got a couple of bills that I bring to you, and we'll start with 3072. 3072 is a bill that I've worked with the Department of Revenue on. It basically authorizes this agency, the Department of Revenue, to disclose tax information and to share tax information with the other privileged licenses and boards which we have in the state of Oregon, authorizing an exchange of information to make absolutely certain that there's those who are applying for and procuring the necessary privilege licenses in the state are in compliance with our tax laws in the state of Oregon as well. And what it does is it gives us an additional opportunity to know that, for instance, if we're issuing 40,000 licenses to contractors, those contractors are filing their tax returns as they should be doing.
That's it on 3072, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do we have questions for Representative Butler, Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler, thank you for being here today. Do you have reason to believe that there is a great deal of noncompliance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe that there is a significant amount of noncompliance. We do not presently have a program that examines our privileged licenses in relationship to tax returns. Some early indication indicates that there is the potential of rather substantial failure to file returns in some sectors, while there may be others in other sectors. So I don't have any specific information, but what this does is that this allows the state, particularly on those privilege licenses where we could have other issues that crop up. Tax return issues are just one of the many issues that would crop up early on, indicating the inability of some folks that have privilege licenses to really serve the public the way that they're supposed to be.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. Representative Butler, are you or anyone asked for an audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, so far as auditing any agency, one of the things that agencies cannot do at present is share any information back and forth with the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue has a rather substantial amount of information, and that information is, until we can allow some at least examination of the privilege licenses within the state, we're not sharing any information back and forth with the Department of Revenue, vice versa, and we need authorization to do that. This bill would provide that authorization, incidentally.
Okay.
With me, I just clarify.
Clarification?
Yes, Mr. Butler. Are you saying that we cannot request the Secretary of State's office to audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the Secretary of State has the authorization to do financial audits of all agencies within the state by constitutional right. So the constitutional right is to do financial audits, not necessarily to match tax return information. And we're not matching tax return information. We're just matching those that have filed who are seeking privileged licenses with those who have not and continue to obtain privileged licenses in the state of Oregon.
And is there a cost check?
Let me break in here. I think what Representative Butler is getting at, as an example, I have a license through TSPC, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission.
Uh-huh.
TSPC cannot give, or Department of Revenue cannot give any information right now to TSPC about me, whether or not I'm compliant with the tax laws.
Okay.
If this were put into effect, Department of Revenue could share that information with TSPC, and if they found that I was not compliant with the tax laws, TSPC could then refuse to give me a new license when it's time for my renewal.
I see.
That's what this is about.
And is this is there a financial burden?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there could be financial benefits as a result of this. More than likely, there would be a tremendous financial benefit as opposed to any additional financial burden. It's just a cross-matching of information with other agencies and would tend to do two things. Number one, it would tend to probably provide for more compliant income tax, compliant folks that have the privilege licenses. And number two, it would probably generate income from those that have not previously been compliant, should be filing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Przanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming, Tom, that this is actually occurring in other states where they have similar type of requirements, and we're just basically trying to have a cross-check, making certain that individuals who are receiving these licenses are in compliance with filing tax returns.
Mr. Chair, Representative Przanski, that's an excellent question, and we have been asking this for a number of years from the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue has demonstrated an excellent history of being able to go back and gather information, but it has not shared information as to whether other states do share information. Other states use the Social Security number in obtaining privileged licenses much more than we have in the state of Oregon. It was only as we began to work on this bill with the Department of Revenue and some of the other department heads throughout the state of Oregon that we realized that some of our older licensing agencies require folks to demonstrate that they do have a Social Security number. They don't have to demonstrate that they're filing tax returns, but they have to demonstrate and provide a Social Security number. In other states, that has typically been a long-term history. In some other states, driver's licenses will not be issued without a Social Security number. So this brings us probably more into conformity with what other states are doing, I would think.
Follow-up, Representative?
Just for the record, Tom, do you have any examples of types of licenses or license boards that require individuals holding a license in this state from whatever agency to actually have filed their tax returns?
Mr. Chair, Representative Przanski, right now there is no requirement that anyone who has a privileged license of any kind, PSBC or the Construction Contractors Board or a medical license in the state of Oregon, there's no requirement that they demonstrate that they are in fact filing an Oregon income tax return, and in fact they may not have to be filing a tax return. However, my concern as I've gone back to the Department of Revenue now for three sessions is, wait a minute, if I've got someone with an Oregon address who has an active and a renewing privileged license, but they're not filing a tax return, it would be a pretty good indication that we'd probably ought to ask them why they're not filing an income tax return, because if they're expending the hundreds of dollars to maintain bonds professional liability or those kinds of things, pretty good indication that we probably ought to have them filing an income tax return, at least to claim the loss so that we know that they're in the system. But there's no way of sharing that information at present, and that's what this bill attempts to do, is to share the information. Not confidential information about the individual's income tax return, just that they're attesting that they are filing, that there's a way to check that out between the agencies. Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Butler? Representative, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. We have Bob Russell and Dee Bridges that would like to testify also. With your indulgence, Representative, I would like to go ahead and hear this bill first, and then we'll move into 3073. Okay?
Good morning. For the record, Dee Bridges, Oregon Forest Products Transportation Association. I wrote down on your sign-up sheet there that I was opposed to this bill. I'm really not opposed to the bill. I think it's got a lot of good things about it. But I wanted to call your attention to what I think may be an unintended consequences, and that is in the area of commercial driver's license for truckers. I know that the bill says that they may require this, but the fear that I have is that at some point that may become a shall do that, and my fear is that would, number one, cost a lot of money for the department to research this information, and number two, it may tend to drive CDL drivers across the state to reside in another state and still drive in Oregon. Worse, it might cause companies to move across out of the borders. And we have a driver shortage in this state, probably nationwide. And I'm just against anything that would tend to exacerbate that. And this might have some small effect on that. So I'd like to see if there's some way of amending it to exclude CDLs.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Association. In all of the discussions of this concept that I've heard, it basically speaks to privilege licenses, as Representative Butler indicated in his testimony. I, too, believe that the way the bill is drafted, an unintended consequence is that it brings in commercial truck drivers because they're issued a commercial driving license by the Department of Transportation. My real concern is the cost to the Department of Transportation of ensuring that all these people are in compliance with the Department of Revenue tax requirements. Right now, as you folks know, we have a critical problem with bridges in our state, and we would like to see as much money as possible from the Department of Transportation address that issue. And there are hundreds of thousands of commercial truck drivers that are licensed by the Department of Motor Vehicles. And we think that if this bill were to go into effect and ODOT were to, in fact, follow its provisions, that the cost would divert substantial amounts of highway fund monies from our bridge problems to take care of this. So we think the concept is absolutely wonderful. We are concerned about what we think is an unintended consequence in sweeping in commercial truck drivers into the provisions. That concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions for either of our Representative Mabry?
I too am very careful about adding additional costs to our transportation dollars, and wouldn't necessarily want to do that. But currently, when I renew my license, I have to at least attest to the fact that I have an insurance policy.
Right.
And I don't think there's very many dollars connected to that. I may be wrong. Would this simple attesting by a CDL driver that he has in fact filed income taxes in the state of Oregon really create that much of a financial burden?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mabry, I don't believe that attesting would cause that much of a burden. However, the way that I read the provisions of the bill, the person would actually have to file some sort of proof of compliance, and that would have to be reviewed by the department. The review process by the department could, in fact, become far more costly. So it depends on how the final language in the bill is actually written. But certainly having a commercial driver attest that they paid their income taxes to the state of Oregon, I don't believe that would be a problem.
Okay. Any other questions for these two gentlemen? I have a question. Well, I have a couple of questions. One is, since it does say may as a condition of issuance, that's more permissive. So consequently, it wouldn't necessarily require that ODOT require a tax attestation. Or they could do an attestation as opposed to require the Department of Revenue to provide proof. Is that correct? Or you read it differently than
Mr.
that?
Chairman, that is correct. It is permissive. It does say may. However, for the bill to be effective, I think we have to do something. So that's where my concern arises.
Okay. My other question is: Did you talk to the sponsor of the bill about your concerns?
Mr. Chairman, I have not yet talked to the sponsor. It is my intention to do so.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I don't have anyone else signed up on the list that wanted to testify on House Bill 3072. Is there anyone else that did want to testify? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3072. I think what I would like to do is I would like to have our gentlemen, if you would, please visit with Representative Butler about your concerns, and let's see if we can come to some kind of agreement, and then within the next few days we can put it back on the schedule for a work session. Okay, thank you. Is Representative Butler going to stay here for?
I think Gina is going to go.
Okay,
my ways and means.
Okay. Okay, he is. Committee, just stand at ease for a moment. We're going to try to get Representative Butler back in here to talk to us about 37-3. Is he on his way? You know, can you?
Yes.
Okay. Just stand at ease for a moment. And then what I'd like to do is have Jason Williams come forward. He's signed up to testify. While he's coming forward, Patrick, could you give us a rundown on this bill, please?
Certainly I will, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3073 requires the governor to submit an annual report to the Legislative Assembly listing all individuals working for state government. The bill stipulates that the report is to include the total annual cost of employing or contracting with each individual. Members, you'll notice that the SMS says the bill may have fiscal impact. LFO is currently still working on developing the fiscal impact, and we're not anticipating that it would be available by the meeting time.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kitts.
Patrick, does LFO believe that there will be? They're just not sure how much.
They plan to issue. They don't plan to issue a no fiscal. They don't know the extent. If it turns out to be a small amount, it would be a minimal fiscal, but okay. They are planning on having something substantial.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, and Jason, just to let you know, when we do find Representative Butler and he comes back in, I may have you, you can stay right there, but I may have you
no problem.
Hold off for a moment while we get Representative Butler.
Yes, I know where I am on the food chain here. Anyways, for the record, my name is Jason Williams, Executive Director of the Taxpayer Association of Oregon, and we bring you here today, Chair members of the committee, House Bill 3073, and kind of stemmed from the idea that this is the year of budget reform.
Let me go ahead and have you hold off, Jason. Representative Butler, we'd like to have you go ahead and come on up, and I'm going to interrupt Jason and let you go ahead and testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom Butler, House District 60. Colleagues, the reason I wear this hat is because you got to eat more beef in Oregon. That's all there is to it. Out in rural Harney County, that's all we've got left. We can't get into our forests, and the OYA is shut down, so I need your help to eat more beef every day. Thank you very much.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I know that somebody's wearing it.
We've got a plan for you.
It sounded good.
Achieve some occupancy in OYA.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's get back to the issue at hand, please.
Mr. Chair, a few years ago, if I could just keep just a moment of levity for just a little while longer, a few years ago, I had efficiency expert come to one of our offices and he was to tell us, you know, how we could become more efficient. And he went around and first interviewed everybody, and we had a kind of a large section right in the middle of the building where we had a group of offices and the conference rooms and so forth. And on the one side, on the north side, when he was doing the north side, which is where the entrances to the offices were, he went down, he'd ask everybody what they did, and he found a couple of guys by the water cooler, and he asked the one guy, he said, "What do you do here?" And he said, "I don't do nothing." And by the time it got through about 25 employees and it got to the south side of the building where we have another water cooler, he come across the guy there that was standing at the water cooler drinking. He said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I don't do nothing." He looked down his list and he said, "Aha, I found some duplication." with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3073 is to try and find out not just what everyone is doing in state government, but how much it's costing us and where these folks are at and whether or not they have job descriptions. As particularly as we go through the Ways and Means process, this is something that is absolutely very concerning to me. I can't go down a list and find out what we're paying the various people who are supposed to be doing the various jobs and what their job descriptions are. I know how many were supposed to be assigned, but only through this process have we been able to find out that there's a large number of vacancies, and those vacancies, we don't know exactly what the folks are supposed to be doing throughout the year. And so for that reason, we've brought you 3073, which gives us an opportunity to have annual, or at least each legislative session, an opportunity to have the governor give us an attestation of a list that will tell us who's working for us, how much they're getting paid, what it costs us for overhead, how much per hour it's actually costing us in each of the various positions, and what they're doing.
Okay. Great. Are there any Representative Kitts?
Representative Butler, thank you. Why is this not, well, first of all, I thought this was already done, shows my freshman-ness.
Your freshman-ness?
That's my George W-ism for the day.
Fresh.
Why is this not effective immediately is my first question.
Because we didn't put an emergency clause on it, and we would like to be able to have it for the next session, and it will take just a little bit of programming time to make sure that all the computer programs over at Department of Administrative Services are able to spit out the information in the format that we need it.
May I follow up, please?
Follow up.
And I understand that as the answer. In light of the budget crisis that we're in this session, right now, I mean, with the effects that the budget cuts that are going to be coming down the pike are going to have on so many people and to these very agencies, wouldn't it be in their best interest to get this information to us sooner rather than later?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, what we do have right now is we have a list of vacancies. The concern that we have is that there's folks that are shifting from one job to another during this time of vacancies, and we need to be able to isolate those. So the best that we can do right now with the resources which we have available to us is basically to root out the vacancies, and we're attempting to do that.
Yes, you may.
Who's opposed to this type of? I mean, the information is obviously public if you want it.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, yes, sir. That's correct.
But not readily available, I'm finding, is the deal with several things here in state government. Is that the case? Is it available to the public, but it's not readily available, and that's what you would aim to do to make it easier as we go through this budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, I thought. When I first came to work as a state employee, that I thought in a legislative capacity, I thought what would happen is that the information about folks that were on the payroll that really weren't doing anything was strictly anecdotal. And then we went through a process where one of the department heads was fired for shifting some specialized funds from one wildlife fund to another fund and utilizing funds that should not have been used, and that person lost their position as a head of an agency, and after 6 months they showed back up on the payroll somewhere else at the same level as they had been as director. And so it's not strictly anecdotal. We've got to find out where those folks are at, and we need to know that early on in the process rather than allow folks to just transition through into another position somewhere else at a high rate of compensation to basically get them to earn their 3 years of PERS so that they can be on their way out of the system.
And my first question was, who is opposed to it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, I don't know. I'm assuming that you'll probably have folks that will testify in opposition to basically a full information kind of a scope. And in that regard, Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, there may be folks that come in and tell us that this is information that's too difficult for us to gather or too expensive to gather in a government. And I'm saying we can't afford not to do this. And besides that, if they want, it'll have to be after 3:30 in the afternoon, because the junior high isn't out until then in order for us to get all of the programmers down here to do this. That's a joke.
Yes, I picked up on that, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought you said Representative.
Nelson? Representative Nelson, would you like to? I was actually referring to Representative Butler.
Sorry.
Representative Nelson, you have a question? Wait 1 second. Were you done, Representative Kitts?
I am. Thank you, and I support this bill.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nelson?
Yes, I just want to say hallelujah for House Bill 0073. Representative Butler, I just have to pretty much agree with Representative Kitts.
Excuse me, Representative. I'm gonna stop you. If you have a question, I'd like you to ask the question.
Yes. Is there a reason we cannot make this an emergency? Because in our new process with our new governor, we're no longer on the current service level budgeting. So it's my assumption that this should be a very much part of what the Association of Oregon Counties is calling zero-based budgeting.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, what we are attempting to do in the Ways and Means process is certainly to try and get our arms around the current employment costs in each of the departments.
And the other thing that we're doing is that we're absolutely scrutinizing the vacancies and the movements and the shifting of positions as much as we possibly can as in these tight budget times as we are cutting back. And so it's our attempt in Ways and Means to, without the actual information of who's working where at what time, it's our attempt to go ahead and attempt to try and make sure that any empty positions are basically not funded in the next budget cycle. And it's the hope that we have that we'll be able to root out 99% of any kinds of inefficiencies or attempts to move a labor cost from one position to another by any of the department heads. And sometimes that's done not for any not for any vindictive or malice aforethought. It's just done in order to cover for overtime or other kinds of things within an agency.
Mr. Chair, I just want to know if I could get an answer to my question.
Mr. Chair, the answer to the question is that without an emergency clause, even with an emergency clause, we probably will not get this done for the current budget cycle.
And I would point out the effective date of this would be January 1 of 2004, and so it's very possible that that DAS and we can have Nancy come up in just a moment and talk about this after Jason's done, but they would probably my feeling would be that they would probably be ramping up so that they could in fact give us the report, because it doesn't call for the report to actually be given to us until January 31 of each year. And so so that's just, and we'll have Nancy come up and address that issue. But I think that there, I would agree with Representative Butler, there probably is not a need for an emergency clause in this particular bill because of when it would go into effect, when the report would be given to us, and the ramp-up time that DAS would need to be able to complete this.
Mr. Chair, it's probably a capturing of information, too, because the scope of information is more broadly defined here than perhaps what may be captured right now at present.
Okay, right. Thank you. Representative Przanski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to capture why or how we're going to use this information, Tom. I'm just using a ballpark of 10% of the state population is employed by state government. That would mean that we'd have a list that's going to be compiled of 300,000 plus people. I don't know what the number is, but I would assume this is going to include all state employees or people that have some type of contract with the state.
At present, Mr. Chair, Representative Przanski, it's delineated to employees and the employee costs, and I believe that at any one time during a calendar year, state employees would represent could represent as many as 50,000 paychecks in one year. And the place where it would be most utilized probably would be those of us who are called upon to make judgment decisions as to whether or not the salaries and compensations for X number of positions are really justified, and as well as those of us who are called upon within our districts to identify who is on state payroll and who is not, what compensation. Those are kinds of information that I don't have at my fingertips, mm-hmm. and sometimes have to go through some real exercises to even find out what department folks are working for.
I could follow up.
Follow-up, Representative Przanski.
And I'm trying to just track this out. Based on the bill, what I see is name, job title, job description, agency, and then the last line would be the actual amount paid on an annual basis, so amount of payment. And it does state in here, maybe contradictory, one place it does talk about employee, but then it also talks about or contracted with. Is it your intention to capture anyone that's receiving compensation from the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Przanski, it was my intention to go ahead on a first-cut basis to know who our employees were. Eventually, the contracts, which are a separate line item from services and supply, or rather personnel costs, the overhead and personnel costs, is a separate line under services and supplies. That's a separate issue, and that would be captured under a separate kind of a program.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Kitts, you had another question?
I do, if I may. Thank you. Representative Butler, I've got to tell you, I don't have the faith that you do in the state agencies. I commend you for having that. Maybe it's my freshman skepticism. However, is there not something that if in fact we have to wait to get something like this enacted, out of fear that the it just seems like this the nut in the ball game where they just keep moving it around on us. Out of fear of that happening, changing positions, taking money out, saving positions, and this sort of thing, is it not possible for the governor to put a freeze on any new hires, on any transfer positions, on any movement that the state agencies would seek to do from here until the point? The bigger question, so that's question one. The bigger question is, before we cut services that we're providing to folks out there, it would seem more appropriate as we go into this budget session to know where these placeholders positions are, these vacancies, and this sort of thing. As so it would seem like all disclosure before we go into the budget process. I know that just sounds like a radical idea, but you could address that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, as to your first point, we're presently under a freeze, but we found that freeze, that hiring freeze, to be very, very, very fluid. And that is that agencies that come forward and report to us today that they have 80 or 90 positions vacant, however, they are presently trying to hire 30 or 40 of those positions back, they're considered to be of a level of personnel that is necessary in order to accomplish the basic mission of that particular department. And that would certainly help us in this process of freeze, because we do see people moving around, positions moving around in that process. And relative to your second question, again, I'm sorry, the shell game of moving employees?
Well, that's what I would aim to curtail, calling upon the governor to stop any of this so that we can accurately find out, so we can accurately seek to do what your bill seeks to do, and stop the game of moving people around and shifting funds. So just put a freeze on as existing the way it is right now. No more shifting, no more moving, no more hiring, no more firing, no more, well, firing's fine, but you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, I think I do, and I do have confidence through the Department of Administrative Services that we are getting our arms around some of that. However, when we do see departments who have large lists of vacancies and within the vacancies identifying those that are frozen, those positions that are frozen, and then as I went through in one particular department, saw positions that were frozen and then positions that are presently being advertised, I see some of the same descriptions in the frozen, those that are being advertised. The concern that I have is that within the Department of Administrative Services, if we know what those people specific, what those positions are specifically doing and what they're accomplishing as they are hired and as they're paid a compensation, then I think we'll be able to get our arms more around the ways and means process and be able to keep those people from moving back in into positions which should be frozen, and we're attempting to take any frozen positions and making them, if they are indeed frozen and they do not deal with the basic direct mission, we're attempting to reach in and pull those particular positions out of the budgetary process so that we're not allocating a dollar amount to that particular position. And then if we know the exact cost of not just the direct cost but the indirect cost, the insurances and the PERS costs and those kinds of things, we're able to reach in and position by position pull those particular positions back out of an agency.
Thank you.
Representative Mabry.
Representative Butler, I'm trying to think your goal here is commendable, but I'm trying to figure out how this does not have the effect of creating a redundant list for a bunch of us that will read John Mabry's name on a piece of paper buried with 50 or 60,000 other people and have any value at all as to whether or not I'm performing a function that is valid, that needs to be done, and you know, putting any value to that. I see the only way in my mind to make that valid is to hire Tom Butler and a crew of 60 to work through this list and audit it on a weekly or monthly basis. Tell me why this is. I mean, if I get delivered on my desk as a freshman legislator a list of 60,000 names that are state employees, I see no value in that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry, first of all, the auditing process is basically what we have to do in the process of the Ways and Means process. Our legislative fiscal office is assisting us with that process, and that's part of the ferreting out. And yes, your name, my name would appear on that list because we're receiving compensation, and I believe that people ought to know that we receive that compensation. I'd like folks to know that I took a 9% cut mid-session during the third or fourth special session last year. I'd like the folks to understand that there are those of us who are not making, because I'm sure those of us who have had emails from angry constituents think that we're really cutting a fat hog here, when in fact many times I'd wake up in the morning and yearn to go back and practice accounting and get beat up on tax returns on a daily basis, but because it pays a whole lot more and I can enjoy it. But through the process, our names will appear, the names of all state employees will appear, and that we will have an opportunity in the Ways and Means process to audit this and make certain that in our winnowing process that we know who the folks are that are assigned to each department, how much the compensation package is costing us.
Follow-up, Representative Mabry?
I think you maybe misunderstood the point of my question, though. I mean, obviously, we work, you know, two or three doors from each other, and you know who I am. But if I'm John Mabry, snowplow driver in Halfway, Oregon, and you've never seen or heard of me before in my life, my point being, you don't have any knowledge of whether I'm a snowplow driver or a hunter of cougar or something that validates my reason for living and for drawing a paycheck for the state of Oregon. And I don't know how seeing my list on a name with 50 or 60,000 other people is going to accomplish that unless you take or somebody takes the effort to find out who John Mabry is, what he does, and then once they've done that, then they have to find out who Floyd Pruszynski is and go through that process, and Don Nelson is, and go through that process. And to me, it just seems like it would require creating a brand new bureaucracy to have any effect. That's all I'm saying.
Mr. Crummell, or Representative Crummell, Representative Mabry, I want you to know that I believe that the right to have that information supersedes the fact that some folks might feel that it would be superfluous, because probably most folks, and the report isn't submitted to anyone other than legislators at this particular time. I mean, it's available to the executive and legislative branches, so that we'll know in the process of our activities exactly what it is that our constituents that work for state government are doing, what they're supposed to be doing, that is, how much they're making, and that we'll know in the Ways and Means process, this winnowing, this auditing process that's necessary, that we'll be able to go ahead and get our arms around that at that time.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, another short question?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Representative Butler. Do you recall that in the special sessions and in the final days of the previous budget, never did we know what the overhead of the Salem parent company was? And we found that cuts were being made in the counties and the local areas versus one agency cut one person at the state level, and all the other 10% cuts were at county levels. Would this not help in that situation?
Chair Crummell, Representative Nelson, what this would do is this would give you names and numbers of the people that would be being cut if we have actual people that are being cut, and many of those decisions, legislatively, the cuts were being made to departments, and then from an executive standpoint, the CEO of the state was translating those cuts as being down to the lowest common denominator, many of the grants, not employees of the state, and that would certainly demonstrate that at that particular point when the list has only shrunk a handful of people, when you've made millions of dollars worth of cuts, then you realize that you haven't cut administration at all, that you've really been cutting your grants where the water gets to the end of the row.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative, I just have one really quick question. We currently have on our desks, actually, we get a phone list. It's complete. It's got everybody in the state. If you know of a state employee, you can look up their phone number and you can call them, whether they're in Ontario or Salem or Wilsonville or wherever. Could that be used, do you think, as part of this listing?
Mr. Chair, I think I would use that, and that we know that the database is already there; it already exists. Therefore, all you've got to do is just you know the position, you know the department. Really, the only information that needs to be added to that, and I wouldn't do it to a telephone list, but the only information that really needs to be added at that particular point is just the extrapolation of the information from the payroll.
Okay, so they're, as you mentioned, their job description and their...
It's all part of the database at present, and we're not talking about a major maneuver. It's, again, it's something that can be done after 3:30 in the afternoon once the programmers get out of junior high.
Right. Okay. This would really be kind of a follow-up bill to a bill that we passed in the O1 session that talks about DAS removing FTE after it's been vacant for a period of time. Would you see it sort of in that light?
Mr. Chair, it certainly would augment that. The concern that we've got here is it's still a right to know, because we do find that people shift around from one position to another, and positions that we thought went away. Well, employees who had been taken from the list have moved around. I think that's a legitimate thing to do, but really we need to be able to have the information at the end of the day that those folks are still on the payroll somewhere else. We need to know that.
What would you say to folks that say that this is really an effort of the legislature to micromanage the state?
Mr. Chair, in the Ways and Means process, if that isn't an exercise in micromanagement, I really don't know what is. We have to get into many of this, and when you're building a budget from a zero base or substantially a zero base, really that is micromanagement. We've got to go in and find out what the basic missions and who those people serve. And again, it's a part of we've got a list in one of the committees that I serve in of seven pages of the various functions. This represents thousands of employees in public safety, but it represents thousands of function or thousands of employees and the functions that they perform. We've got to prioritize those. And I've gone back into some of my general government subcommittees and have asked, I need to know now a breakdown of not just the number of people in each of the categories or of each of the departments within a particular agency, but within each of the categories, how many office assistant ones do I have? How many managers do I have? I'm trying to gather information of how many managers to staff line employees I have. Those are the kinds of information, and that is micromanagement, if you will, from a Ways and Means process. But it's what we end up having to do when we find agencies that have one and two line employees working for a manager. We've got to come back in, and that isn't information that is extrapolated from the actual budget hearing. It's information that would be thus produced on information about that department to us as we go through it.
Okay, thank you.
I'd just ask one quick one.
One more quick one. We do need to move on.
I'd just like to ask, Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, would you consider including in your bill what we suspect, and it's certainly a suspicion, that there were also $500 million of consultants paid in our state system? Would you consider to include those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we do know that we do pay consulting, and what we're asking of each of the subcommittees is asking and finding where the various consulting. We're getting some of those out. For instance, Secretary of State spends millions of dollars consulting with CPAs, has actual CPA firms on retainers for the Secretary of State's office to come in and assist with that constitutional function of the fiscal audits that are performed. And so that's something that we are doing presently, and we do have a listing. Right? And, for instance, we do find when we look at some of the various commissions and so forth that they have contracted with perhaps law firms and whose partners may actually be members of the commissions themselves. And those are the kinds of things that we actually are coming across as we're getting down into it. So I welcome the opportunity to gather more information. I think this bill starts as an inroad to give us those kinds of lists and information. And I think as we continue in the process, we're going to go ahead and figure out where our contracts are. And I believe that because this deals largely with state employees, I believe that probably the contracting portion will be a next logical step.
So it will include, is that the answer? It will include consultants.
Could
eventually it could.
Good.
I think one of the things that I would point out is that our expenses on consultants is not necessarily wasted money, but is money that is earned by the private sector in contracts with the government and for specific functions. So I just toss that out. Let me go ahead and move on then. Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And you're welcome to stay. I am going to have Nancy Young come up here in a couple of minutes and just kind of see if there's any questions that there might be. So if you want to stick around, you can. But otherwise, thank you very much. Jason, go ahead.
I know you got a lot of bills. I'll just take 3 minutes. Jason Williams, Taxpayer Association of Oregon. To me, this bill is a perfect complement to the call of budget reform that's going on this year. You know, Kungoski saying, you know, end of current service level. Talk in this committee about zero-based budgeting, and Representative Nelson about, you know, sectioning out things like overhead. And it's part of our call to say we just need greater accountability, clarity, and accessibility in the budget, especially with such a huge section of the budget, state employment. And so it has been a frustration among legislators as we have tried to deal with the budget over the past few years, that they just feel like they do not have a grasp of it. It's not clear enough. And of course, you know, it's just the natural complexity of the budget sometimes can get out of hand. But we think this would just be a perfect tool. And if you look at it, and maybe we brought up the point, well, you know, if you zero on just one particular employee, sometimes you may miss the whole picture. Sometimes it is taking everything in chunks and being able to use it as comparative, saying, well, hey, in Oregon we use this many employees for this task. Washington has more. Are we keeping up with population? So it could be a great way of looking at public employment on a macro level. But you can't make those good decisions, or you can't see the red flags, or you can't see ideas for reform unless you have a good starting point. And that good starting point is having everything broken out in a clear and a clear and precise way. And of course, I do wonder, because it does say job description, and legislators would be in there, what the job description of legislators would be listed in the book. I'll be interested to see that. But anyway, so that we just see that, it's just I wouldn't balance the budget without having one of these resources at my disposal. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Krasinski, you have a question?
I do, a couple. Mr. Williams, you've heard Representative Butler talk about how he thinks it needs to be handled. I was wondering if you're in agreement that basically ways and means or some component of the legislature would in fact need to do a micromanaging of each of the agencies to really know from that list what people are doing, whether it's necessary or complementary for their job description. Would you agree with that?
I would say that the Ways and Means is trying to do the best they can looking at every expenditure. This just provides a tool. Whether someone can see something in there that says, hey, I want to pursue this angle, I don't imagine everyone's going to go through every single name. It just provides a starting point for people to look where it's going. And those people that are interested in, you know, human services can go through the entire, you know, human services employment to make sure that there is efficiency and that there are enough employees in certain areas, or not enough, or too many. It all depends. For us, just knowing where the money is being spent and having it in a clear, accessible way is just essential to balancing the budget.
Follow up, Representative Representative Krasinski.
Representative Mabry brought up a point which I agree with him, is that just because you have the list showing what these numbers are, you're really not going to be able to do justice as to, I mean, maybe you yourself could say a certain department is spending X amount of money on their employees. I mean, without going into the merits of what that money's being paid for, I think it's going to be lost upon the individual voter or the general public as to exactly what that means. So it would seem to me that we would need to have some type of a review, audit, micromanaging, whatever you want to call it, of each of these line items to determine whether or not, would you or your organization be willing to support the legislature doing that work? In the sense of actually going through and doing some type of overall managing and micromanaging whatever that list to determine the validity of those employment situations.
Chair Crummell, members of the committee, we would be able to do anything we want to be able to help you guys in the process of going through the. We do that currently. We try to go through, read through the budget, and try to help any way that we can. I mean, we're limited resources, and when we have good tools like this, if we had this book, that would help us.
Mr. Williams, so. My question really was, would your organization support the legislature doing that work?
Oh, Chair, members of the committee, support having audits of...
that the legislature actually perform that work.
Yeah, I would like to see more audits of the agencies. Yes.
Another question, if I could.
Representative Brzezinski?
Based on your I guess, willingness to see the legislature do that, would your group also support or endorse the legislature, instead of being a citizen legislature that meets every other year, becoming a full-time legislature? Because in my opinion, that's what it's going to take to be reviewing this list every year, is to have these the 90 individuals that sit in our positions to be able to do the line item basically around the year.
Chair, members of the committee, my recommendations with the full year legislature would be, hey, you just may want to try it out. I mean, the legislature can convene themselves, you know, with the governor. If you guys need to meet next year, do it. Give it a test run to see how it works.
I'm not speaking about annual sessions. I'm talking about making this legislature a full-time legislature, just like you have in Congress, day in and day out.
Chair, members of the committee, if that's what it's going to take to have you guys more full-time legislators and more audits to be able to get a handle of the budget, then I would be more than willing to look at that avenue and recommend points as we get closer to that.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I would recommend that we become full-time, but that's a different issue.
Well, I wouldn't either, but I think that's the point, is looking at 60,000 names and being able to do a line item review.
I understand where you're going. Representative Mabry?
I guess I'm going back. It's a similar question I asked Representative Butler, but, you know, when I was running first time for county judge, I had a constituent ask me in an open forum or make the statement that he could see no reason why we needed all those deputies in the sheriff's office. The sheriff has one responsibility, and that's to hand out subpoenas and legal work. And I tried my very best to explain to him why we needed more than a sheriff, why we needed some deputies. And the second time I ran for election, he asked the same question in the same open forum and said he didn't see the value of that. And he did it the third time I ran for election.
Yeah.
Point of that being, there are professional organizations that, given the size of our county and the number of people in our county, that would give you documented proof that you needed 30 deputies. We had about 16 or 17 or 18, depending upon the budget year. And as closely as I worked with that group, I couldn't sit here and swear to you that we needed 12 or we needed 22 to really do the job. It's a matter of opinion, I guess. And we had the one extreme of the guy says we don't need any of them. So the point being, if I've got this magic list and I look at Department of Administrative Services and it says we've got 23 clerks, I don't have any way of knowing whether that we need 23 or 123 or two. That information doesn't get me anywhere. And I'm trying to figure out how this list that costs money to print, money to gather, money to distribute, and then has to be changed either on a monthly or a semi-annual basis, how that's not redundant. How do we do that without, like Floyd says, having a 24-hour a day, 365-day-a-year legislature that's going to bird dog that, or a staff of thousands to monitor it. I just don't see how this gets us where we want to be. I understand what you're trying to accomplish, but I'm not convinced that this does.
Chair, members of the committees, I'd basically say that, you know, the book, this annual report wouldn't answer everything, but it gets back to us. It can be a starting point. It can be a starting point where someone could say, you know, look at those clerks. They could pursue it and then find out, hey, we're shortage of clerks, or hey, this is perfectly fine. So it definitely gives a starting point. And but I feel like right now, having clarity and being able to break up the budget in a more understandable, accessible way is just essential. I wouldn't see it as redundancy. I wouldn't hope that it wouldn't take a lot, because human resources has to capture this information anyways. I mean, they have to do that every time they send out a paycheck. So, in my world, I would imagine this would be very easy to produce, although there are, you know, time issues in producing it. But it just comes back down to with clarity and accessibility, you just need this to be able to balance the budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I'm going to cut us off there. Nancy, did you have anything that you wanted to add, or do you want to respond to questions that came up? This is Nancy Young from Department of Administrative Services. Do we have any questions for her at this point? Representative Nelson, a quick one?
Yes.
Because I really want to get on to another bill that we have Representative Shetterly here for. So, Nancy, welcome. Maybe you could go ahead and state your name for the record.
I'm Nancy Young, the Department of Administrative Services and Resource Services Division. And our division is one of the divisions within the department that collects the information that you would be receiving.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, your question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Nancy. Thanks for being here. It's my understanding that the various agencies are required to have performance measurement. I particularly am aware of that in human services. So in order to have performance measurement accountability, don't you need to know how many people it would take to perform each service? And without it, how would we know how to budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. By performance measures, I'm assuming that you mean measuring how well an agency is meeting their mission and the goals of the agency. We also
Correct.
Have performance measures, which also get down to the employee level. How well is the employee doing that job that they are assigned to do? I believe that how an agency accomplishes validating their meeting their performance measures is actually through the budget process, as far as the FTE they use or need to accomplish their programs.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Young? Nancy, thank you. Appreciate it. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3073, and we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 3194. Representative Shetterly, if you would come up, and while he is, if you and Patrick give us a rundown of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will. House Bill 3194 authorizes cemetery maintenance districts to operate through a board of 3 to 5 directors, prescribes terms for those directors and procedures for changing the number of directors on the board.
Okay. Representative Shetterly, welcome to General Government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to be back. For the record, Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 23. What you have before you with House Bill 3194 is a good small government bill. It comes to us by way of the Dallas Cemetery Maintenance District that saw a problem and asked for some help from the legislature to fix their problem. I received a letter actually a couple of years ago, too late to get a bill in 2001, from Mary Lou Gardner, who is chair of the cemetery district. And she points out that in her letter that one of our board members recently resigned, leaving just two of us on our board. We have active board participation and manage a sizable budget. I would be much more comfortable transacting business if we had a larger board of directors. This would provide a wider base of opinions on important decisions, and we would have more flexibility in project supervision. I believe it would serve the board and the public very well to increase the allowable number of directors to comply with the public meetings law. It is virtually impossible to have a conversation except at our monthly meeting. We also face potential problems when illness occurs or a conflict of interest arises. I think all of these points address some of the practical limitations when you have a three-person board, and so in this case, this cemetery district feels that they would better function with a five-person board, and certainly rather than a bill that would raise the requirement that all cemetery districts go to five, it seemed to me a reasonable thing to do would be to give them an option. Currently in the law, they are limited to three directors. This bill simply gives them the option of increasing the size of the board to, or setting the size of the board at five members, and then the rest of the bill is just the mechanical part of how a board goes about changing from either three to five, or if it does that and then wants to go back from five to three, how it does that. So that I present to you. I think you have a couple of other people signed up to testify, including Vi Starks, who is also on the Dallas Cemetery Board, and can tell you a little bit about the local circumstance there. But I commend this to you as a pretty simple and straightforward bill that gives some flexibility to these local districts to allow them to operate in a way that might best suit their local circumstances and needs. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Sheridan?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson?
I just have one question. Do you have a list of where those, I've never heard of this, but who does not have districts? Are these by county?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I'm sure there is a list. I don't have it. They're not by county. They would be by cemetery districts would have their own boundaries. In this case, it's a Dallas cemetery district. I am sure that they're not limited in geographical scope to city boundaries, but they would have their own boundaries, just like any other special district, like a water conservation district or a sewer district, those kinds of things. These are just a specie of local government districts.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. And you're most welcome to stick around while we work on this. But
thank you, Mr. Chair. We're doing battle with some community college funding formula issues down in revenue. I'll go back there.
Thank you. Let's see. I would like to have both Chelsea Nickel and Violet Starks come up, and we'll just do this as a panel, if that's all right. Where's that from? Yeah, we're just, this is one. Good morning, and welcome to General Government.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chelsea Nickel, and I represent the Special Districts Association. Today I'm here before you in support of House Bill 3194. Sitting next to me is Violet Starks, and she is the district manager for the Dallas Cemetery Maintenance District, and I'm sure she'd be happy to answer any of your questions after I give you a brief testimony in support of the bill. The Special Districts Association represents approximately 800 special service districts throughout the state of Oregon. Many of those districts include their port districts, park and recreation districts, cemetery maintenance districts, rural fire and protection districts, and many other districts that are governed by unpaid volunteers. Currently, the Special Districts Association has 30 cemetery districts in their membership. Like Representative Shetterly said, cemetery maintenance districts are currently governed by three-member boards. This bill would allow them the option to choose to have either a three- or five-member board of directors. Special Districts Association supports this bill because they believe that it allows more flexibility in their board compensation, because often it is hard, like Representative Shetterly said, to obtain a quorum because of the small size of their board. We believe that allowing to have five-member districts provides the opportunity for greater efficiency in decision-making. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions or refer you to Violet, who may be able to help you more.
Violet, did you have a comment that you wanted to make? Or
just one clarification. I am an employee at the Dallas Cemetery District. Representative Shetterly thinks I am a member because I have been there for 17 and a half years. So, which is, our chairman, Mary Lou Gardner, has been there longer, approximately 25 years. So you can see that we have a very vested interest in the cemetery and our local area.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for either one of our guests? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate being here. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on House Bill 3194? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3194. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3194. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass HB 3194 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Gina, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Representative Wirth and Kitts are excused. Crummell is aye. And Representative Shetterly, we're going to ask him to carry this on the floor. Okay.
Thank
you. Shetterly. Pardon? Oh, yeah. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3194. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3212. You want to give us a rundown on this one, please, Patrick?
Yes, I'd be glad to. Thank you. House Bill 3212 grants a leave of absence for up to 90 days to a public or private employee who is a member of the Oregon National Guard on state active duty status.
Okay. We have with us the Colonel. And his assistant?
She wouldn't do that.
Are you saying that there is no one that can assist you, Colonel?
Yes, sir.
For the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, the Oregon Military Department Deputy Director, and Shalee Honeywell from DAS. So she's here to keep me in line. So.
Okay.
So I'm here to assist. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, before you today is House Bill 3112, and we would like to, as you noticed on the sign-up sheet, that we are opposed to this bill as it currently stands, and I'd like to cite those reasons.
Please do.
The primary purpose of the bill is to, currently, the current statute allows for state active duty call-ups to be granted to employees with an unlimited amount of duty time, and this bill limits that to 90 days. That's our primary concern of the bill. And give you an example, in today's environment, as you well know, is yesterday we deployed 407 people at 1249th. That brings our total to almost 1,500 Army Guardsmen who have been deployed in support of the war in Iraq. And to give you, if we were in a state emergency situation, it's entirely possible that we're going to have to extend people's duties longer than we would normally like to do. The first time in the 12 years or 14 years now that I've been in as an employee of the military department was last summer when the fire season was so bad that we actually extended people beyond 30 days. It's typically not our desire nor our liking to do that. In fact, last year was the first time that we've had to call units as whole units without asking for volunteers first when it comes to state active duty. So with the 90-day limit, or with a correction, 90 days per year, 30 days total, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah. 90 days per year. It's entirely feasible, given a bad fire season, that we could have people, particularly with reduced numbers, that would have to be called for state active duty for longer than that 90-day period. And that either forces us then to pull them off the state active duty, send them back to their employee, or risk employment benefits with their employer. So in any case, we don't think it's in our best interest to do this, and we would recommend that either it be amended, which we would like to see amended, and if it was amended, we would like to see that 90-day provision struck, and we'd also like to see the opportunity for us to add language that protects some of the retired state employees that we have in the Guard, who we found last year. We had to go out and seek them out and pull them off the fire lines because they were going to disrupt their PERS benefits after 30 days worth of service. And that was very problematic as well. It's very unusual that I would come to this committee or any committee and and particularly with the good relationships that we have with Representative Mabry on your committee, and certainly Representative Wesson, who are strong supporters of the Guard, and Representative Canope. I think what's happened here, and it's unfortunate, was that last summer one individual of the Guard, who also, I don't know this for certain, but I'm thinking that he actually got in crossways with an employer. Employer got upset with him, and he was protected under the current statutory language. And had we known that, we typically go out and try to resolve those before they ever come to such a crisis. And the employer, 9 times out of 10, will win. We're not out here trying to disrupt employers, and certainly if it becomes a critical need of ours, we'll go discuss that with the employer and try to make arrangements. But in my 32 years in the Oregon National Guard, I can tell you right now that I can't recall when an employer didn't win or we didn't have an agreement if we had a problem. Something happened here to cause this. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but that's what I surmise. So we would recommend that you don't take the bill in its current state and that we get an opportunity to work on it and amend it.
Okay. Thank you. Shelley, did you have anything that you wanted to add, or are you just here to answer questions?
Just here to answer questions if it comes up with regards to position management or other issues that could happen within.
Okay. I do have one quick question before I go to Representative Mabry, and that is the difference between state active duty status and federal active duty status. And Colonel, if you would just real briefly distinguish the two, because now with the deployments that we've sent out here of our 1,300 or 1,400 or so state people, that has actually been for federal deployment, if I'm not mistaken. And could you just give us a real brief distinction between
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir. And that you're exactly correct. The deployments that we've been having here of recent have been for federal active duty, which is protected under federal law. There is also state law that somewhat mirrors that, but in any event, the individuals are protected to the length of their deployment up to 4 years, but they can be extended to a fifth year. And at the end of 5 years, then they no longer have property rights back to their position as they left in any facet of the of society, not just government, but it's across the board. So those individuals, currently by federal law, they can be called by the president for up to 2 years. However, there are provisions that he can extend them beyond that 2 year with the with Congress approving it. But he has the absolute right. All of our people are being called under the 2 year call up right now, so they could be gone as long as two. But again, they are protected.
Okay.
So that is the primary difference. And this is state active duty is what this is talking about. And their federal law doesn't apply. I don't know if I told this committee or not, but when you join the National Guard, you join the National Guard of the state you're in, state of Oregon in our case, and the National Guard of the United States. So you actually belong to two entities simultaneously. And by that dual membership, then that gives the president the ability to call to federal service. Otherwise, we're under what's called state service or Title 32 status as far as the federal government is concerned, in which we're under the control of the governor. But our training is paid for by the federal government under Title 32 statutory language.
But with regards to when they're called to active duty, generally it's four short periods of time that are 30 days or less, as with the folks that go out on the fire lines. And then at the end of 30 days, do you have the option of extending that 30 days to a longer period of time, or do you have to release them to go back to their employer reassign them if the need arises?
Mr. Chairman, currently under current statutory language, it's fairly rare that you would be called beyond 30 days.
Okay.
That's been the practice. However, you got two entities. You got a state active duty and you got federal active duty. You can be called beyond the 30-day window for federal active duty, for
right.
A school, 6 months, whatever, then you fall under the federal rules, under Title 32 rules, which are USARA, it's called. Under this provision, and what we're talking about for state active duty, if you look at the state active duty language, the governor has to declare emergency, the governor has to call people to state active duty under the provisions of emergency clauses declaring an emergency in the state of Oregon. At that point, the governor then, under the current statutes, this individual can be called till the end of the emergency. And this bill says, well, we're going to limit that leave of absence up to only 90 days. So if the emergency goes beyond 90 days, and, you know, I don't know that there is, we've not had one in my lifetime, but there's entirely possible that you could have weapons of mass destruction, you could have just about anything in today's world, and I don't know that any of us could forecast just exactly how long that incident will last.
Okay.
So this limits our ability to do those functions under state control, under the governor, for 90 days, and we would have to work those people out in order to protect their job rights.
Okay. Now I understand it better. Representative Mabry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I understand it a little bit better, too. I'm not aware of any conflict that caused this. What I'm aware of is Representative Westland talked to me about one of my constituents pointing out that our understanding that there was no provision for any job protection if you were called out under a state emergency. What we were trying to accomplish here was to give some protection. Apparently what you're telling us is that you're limiting that protection. And so given that scenario, if I'm understanding correctly, I would have no problem with doing some additional work on this to make sure we get it right.
Okay.
Because we're not trying to limit here. We're trying to
Just trying to improve things, as opposed to...
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kerm Caldwell.
Ma'am.
Thank you. And we're so grateful for the help of the National Guard.
Thank you.
Always. Could this bill be amended to take care of the problem with the retirees at the same time? And how would we word it for that? Is that a state issue on hers, I'm assuming?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that is correct. And we've wrestled with this. Frankly, we decided not to pre-file a bill because of all the issues surrounding PERS. We were a little concerned about that, and we were wondering what that was all going to mean. But in actuality, and we probably failed the test by not coming to the legislative session with that bill, because we had several people last year who were retired policemen, for example, who went on the fires, and they ended up on the biscuit fire, they ended up calling it. They told us, they said, they'd been out for 28, 29 days, and they said, you know, this could be a problem. They got to a payphone, called PERS, and they said, yeah, we're going to limit your benefits. And they came to us and said, you know, you got to get us out of here. You got to get us off state active duty or we're screwed. And so we immediately pulled them off, which was not the way you want to run a railroad in those kind of circumstances. So if we get a chance to work with Representative Mabry and Representative Westland, we would definitely add the language, and it would probably just fit right into the laws. Permanent, as it says now, where it gives sick leaves and pay and other items, and we've even come up with some language we'd have to run it by an attorney, but our eligibility retirement benefits for reemployed retirees who have reached normal retirement age is something to, when you get that 1039 hours of time, which can happen real quick on a fire, it's not 6 months. I mean, all of a sudden you're working 20-hour days. That chunks up pretty quick, and at day 31, you know, we roll over, these guys lose benefits. Quite often, they're working for us at a rank of an E5, which is going to make considerably less than what they were making in their, maybe in their retirement. So it's a real hindrance. So if we get an opportunity, yes, indeed, we would want to fix that.
Okay. Thank you. Is there, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Before you go, I just had a thought, which I know can be dangerous. But what I, with regards to the PERS, would that have then extended the PERS? Would that have then extended for the entire year, affecting their benefits, or just for the next month or two? How does that And Shelley,
Mr. Chairman, I can't answer that. I'm not a PERS expert. Well, I never was, and I'm certainly not now.
Okay. Shelley, I don't know. Do you know the answer to that question by any chance?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that I know exactly the complete impact, if it is for a full year or not. We definitely would be willing to find the answer for you.
Okay.
I'd also like to make another point, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
With regards to the 90 days, I know part of the components when you're called up to federal active duty under the state statutory language. Upon return, there's a 90-day period that you have to return to employment. It's the reemployment rights. And so I think that part of that is what's in alignment here, to make sure that the same rights afforded both for federal active duty and state active duty.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Could have been the confusion.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. There anyone else that wanted to testify on House Bill 3212? Come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Bodkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We share Colonel Caldwell's concerns. We have a large number of members who have been called up to active duty for any variety of issues. Of course, now that there's a large number of them over in Iraq or being deployed to Iraq, which then moves a whole different group of folks into line to be called up for state emergencies if there was one. So we don't want to see any limitations. The PERS issue, I think that's pretty readily, addressed. We understand limitations within PERS, and I think that Mr. Hendricks down in Legislative Council could certainly assist us in drafting language that would protect retirees from those limitations when they're, and I think that most folks want it pretty well controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's easily done to just say that when you're serving through the National Guard or been called up to active duty because of a statewide emergency or a state emergency, then those limitations do not take effect. I can't imagine anybody in the PERS coalition having a problem with that. And I will run it by them to be sure, but I don't think there'd be any opposition to that kind of language. And I think, nobody's a PERS expert, but I think that you're only a PERS expert for 10 seconds at a time,
Right.
till something changes. But I'm pretty sure that it is a month by month. But again, I agree with the previous witnesses. We need to double check that to be sure. But I think that with the changes that Colonel Caldwell is suggesting, I think this could be a really good bill and could provide for some hole filling that we didn't realize was there. So,
okay.
Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. We just want to offer our support for the changes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3212. Colonel, I'm going to ask you and Shelley and Mary if you would work with Representative Mabry and Representative Westland to kind of formulate some amendments that we could put into this so that we don't end up shooting you in the foot. No pun intended.
I'm shooting him in the foot.
And I would also like to ask you to get the clarification on the PERS, because if we need to clarify that, then I would either want to do that as part of a PERS reform bill or do that as part of this bill, and I think probably as part of this bill would be the cleaner way to do it. So if you would do that, and then we can bring this bill when there's amendments that have been prepared, we can bring this bill back for a work session. Okay. I already closed the public hearing. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3062. Let's see, Patrick, would you give us a rundown on this bill, please?
Sure. And House Bill 3062 suspends the requirement that public libraries maintain actual operating expenditures for public library services or maintain a percentage of property taxes dedicated to local library purposes in order to be eligible for state financial assistance for the 2003-05 biennium. The bill declares an emergency and takes effect upon passage. the SMS indicates may have fiscal impact. There is no fiscal impact to the bill.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, Nan and Jim, go ahead and, if you would, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Library Association in support of House Bill 3062, and with me is Jim Shepke, our state librarian. House Bill 3062 addresses the state's ready-to-read grants for public libraries. It's a relatively small program in terms of state dollars with what we believe is a big impact on children and their reading skills in this state. Ready-to-read grants are the only state general fund assistance to public libraries in this state. The grants are distributed according to a formula based on the number of children in each library's service area, with some adjustment for rural libraries with particularly large geographic areas. The grants are used to enhance children's services, especially to help preschoolers enter school ready to read. Oregon's 125 public libraries qualify for their grants if they use them for children's services and if they can assure that their local government that funds them has maintained support for at least one of the two preceding years. And we actually, the Oregon Library Association, requested that provision in the law years ago when the state began general fund assistance to public libraries, to assure that the funds would be used to enhance library services and not to supplant local funding. We still think that this provision is a good idea in the long run, but given the state of the economy and the challenges facing local governments right now, we are very concerned that too many libraries will lose these grants and too many children will lose the services that these grants help provide. And that is why our association has asked for this bill to suspend just for the next biennium that maintenance of effort requirement. When this bill was introduced, I think 4 or 5 weeks ago, we knew of about 4 or 5 libraries that wouldn't qualify. Since then, I was talking to Mr. Shepke before the hearing, there are many, many more. So this program, keeping this program alive, is our association's main priority this session, and this bill is part of that effort, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Jim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Shepke, Director of the Oregon State Library. I'm here today in support of this bill. The State Library Board is very supportive of this bill. We're very concerned that if this bill does not pass, that many Oregon libraries would not receive ready-to-read grants in the next biennium. I think Ms. Heim explained the bill and its impact very thoroughly. I would just add that we did this once before in 1997 after Measure 50 passed. We were seeing that many library budgets were going to be reduced, and we came to the Legislative Assembly and a similar bill was passed, and it did suspend the maintenance of effort for the next biennium, and that worked very effectively. The libraries got their grants, the services were continued, and it reset the maintenance level in all the libraries so that when the maintenance of effort resumed in the following biennium, it worked very well. So we're very supportive of this bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for either Nan or... Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 3062? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3062. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3062. Representative Przanski?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. Do we have any subsequent referrals on this one?
No, we don't have a subsequent referral.
And I would move HB 3062 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Representative Przanski moves House Bill 3062 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Ginny, you want to call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Excuse? Aye. House Bill 3062, having received a constitutional majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm going to ask Representative Worth to carry it since she is one of the sponsors. Close the public hearing on the work session on House Bill 3062. And we are going to move into a work session on...
We need to close down, so we probably take a few minutes for it to get down.
Let's sounds good. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2131. And let's see, Patrick, if you would give us a little rundown on this bill, please, on the corrections that have been made. And
Mr. Chair, we heard this bill on January 28th. Seems like a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. That's why it seems like it.
At the time, the bill authorizes state and local governments, issuers of bonds, to enter into agreements for exchange of interest rates. Declares an obligation for the governmental unit backed by full faith and credit of the Texan car to be an enforceable contract and commits the governmental unit to raise sufficient revenue to repay the obligation, grants exclusive jurisdiction to the tax court to determine whether the use of proceeds of bonded indebtedness is authorized. It authorizes the expenditure of revenue raised by local option taxes beyond the period of years during which the local option may be levied, and modifies the authority of state and local government to issue and administer bonds. At our previous hearing, representatives from the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission indicated that there were some changes that they wanted to see made to get the bill closer to the original intent, and the dash 2 represent the second incarnation of those amendments and do not change the bill substantively in any way. If you have any questions, we have representatives from the Oregon State Treasury here to answer them. And from Housing and Community Services.
Okay. Right. I see them both out there. Okay. Are there any questions for Patrick or Representative Brzezinski? Did you have?
The only question I have is, have the interested parties that worked on this signed off on the current dash 2 amendments?
Yes. Thank you, Representative Brzezinski. All interested parties of the bill have been given copies of the dash 2 amendments and are satisfied that they achieve what the goal is. Oh, one other thing I should mention, there is no fiscal or revenue impact to the bill with the dash 2 amendments.
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Can we ask a question of who's here?
Kate, do you want to come up and talk about
No.
I'm sorry. The representative from the Treasury does not want to come forward, so no, you can't ask any questions.
Okay, thank you anyway. I didn't know anything anyway.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I am here from Treasury. We do staff the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. However, I don't have a member from the commission that was able to make it today, so I'm not sure that I could answer your question. Maybe Housing could, but pose it, please.
Kate, Mr. Chair. Kate, because this is an area of which I'm not very familiar.
Me too.
Maybe our administrator knows, or our chair probably knows. I'm just trying to find out how does this impact cities from business as usual, or I don't understand the what's the word? The purpose, since the cities were not, didn't bring it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I did attend the original, or part of the original hearing, I believe, back at the end of January. And I believe at that time you did pose a similar question to the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission Chair, Pat Clancy. And if your question is whether the cities themselves, the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission is there to assist the municipalities with their debt issuances, there was no opposition to this from the cities, was my understanding.
I do have a note here from Michelle Deister with League of Oregon Cities, and she says, in case a question is asked, LOC supports, League of Oregon Cities supports House Bill 2131, exchange of interest rates. She couldn't stay. She had an appointment that she had to go to. And I'm assuming that she means with the Dash 2 amendments, since she knew that those were under consideration.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, my understanding of the Dash 2s is just expanding the indebtedness definition to beyond bonding to recognize other types of indebtedness, such as certificates of participation.
Other types of instruments that cities
so
and counties will use.
It.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I feel better now. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Is there any other? Are there any other questions for Kate? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Representative Przanski.
I move the Dash 2s into House Bill 2131.
Thank you. Representative Przanski moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2131. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Przanski.
Move the amended House Bill 2131 to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Representative Przanski moves House Bill 2131 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I would just point out that this is a tool that will be that the cities and counties will be able to utilize as part of their debt structuring, and do recommend an aye vote. Gina, you want to call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Excused. Aye. House Bill 2131, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed and on to the floor. Do I have a volunteer for carrying it?
I'd love to.
Representative Kitts would love to carry this bill. Thank you, Representative. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2131, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2417. We have Representative Close with us, and Representative, if you would come forward, please. And while she's doing that, Patrick, would you give us a rundown on the changes, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2417, we heard on February 4th. The bill, in its original form, prohibits the City of Salem from requiring payment for parking a motor vehicle on streets adjacent to the state capitol. Before you, you have copies of the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. Representative Close could probably explain them better than I could. They changed the bill in order to provide that individuals testifying before committees or attending the Capitol for legislative purposes can obtain a day parking permit through legislative administration.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate committee hearing this bill again. We've brought you the Dash 1 amendments. It was my feeling that the committee wanted the bill narrowed. You didn't want to include paid lobbyists, so we're not able to help Kevin Campbell, but I'm sure he will do well without us. So we've narrowed this bill, and we've said that it would be people that if you look in Section 1, we've defined lobbying and people who are paid lobbyists, then under that statute, which is defined, they will not be able to get the free parking pass. Section 2, it says that it'll be the legislative administrator that issues the pass. That's currently being done. They give the pass for the $6 fee down in, I think it's room 48 or 40 downstairs. So it would be the same process, only there would not be the charge. If they provide the written testimony or the pamphlets that they're distributing, that they're lobbying, the name of the member of the committee that they've arranged to be here, they have to give some information to establish that they are non-paid, that they're lobbying an issue as a citizen. And then they are given the pass to park free of charge. We know that it will cost something to do this. We don't have the fiscal on it yet, but and it's hard, I'm sure, to guess how many there will be, but I assume they will look at how many people testify in committees each session. I would think when the legislature is not in session, you will not have many of these passes being given except for the interim committees. So that's basically the bill. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay. Are there questions for Representative Close? No.
From Representative Close.
Oh, but Representative Brzezinski, you have a question?
I guess from council as to when we may get the fiscal.
I spoke to Adrienne Sexton with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and she was she indicated that that they were tracking down the information. We've been in committee services. We've been trying to look at the number of people who've testified on an average week, extrapolating that out over session. At this time, they're not sure exactly a number for the cost of it, and they indicated if it's the committee's wish to send the bill to the floor, that they could provide for if it has a significant fiscal impact that justifies sending it to Ways and Means Committee, that they could add that subsequent referral after it's been sent to the Speaker.
That the Speaker could add one. That would be correct. The other option would be if it went to the floor and passed out of the floor, the Senate would always have the option of sending it to Ways and Means as well. So if it comes back that there is a large fiscal that we didn't anticipate with this bill, there is a way to make sure that it gets to the Ways and Means Committee before it has final passage and goes for the governor's signature. Okay. Is there any other questions or comments? I would point out that I worked with Representative Close on the amendments to kind of narrow this and try to get to where it was, I think, that the committee wanted to go with this bill. And the other thing that it did is that it, rather than have this the city of Salem taking any kind of a hit on parking and that sort of thing, it's just but it still is a way for us to encourage and have people that want to come and testify be able to do so. When I say people, I mean other than paid lobbyists, dealing with people in the general public that want to be able to come and testify on bills.
And Mr. Chair, I believe there are like three of those parking spaces right now, so it isn't like it's unprecedented. There are free parking spaces, there's just very few.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Kitts, would you be willing to make a motion?
Do you want to close the...
We're in work session.
I would make a motion that we accept the -1 amendments to 2417.
Okay. Representative Kitts moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2417. Is there any discussion? Representative Przanski.
Mr. Chair, at this point, I feel very uncomfortable moving a bill but not knowing what the fiscal is, especially knowing what our current budget situation is. So at this point, I'm not ready to move forward until we get more definitive answers from the fiscal.
Okay. Okay, so noted. Representative Avakian, did you have a...
I would agree with that. Also, do we know what the position of the city of Salem is on the amendment and the bill as it stands now?
I think I could answer that. Brandon Bennett, who had testified at the previous meeting, was here, and I noticed that when the chair asked if any bills wanted to comment on it, that he should have said, I believe the city of Salem is okay with the bill and with the amendments.
I would assume they're fine with it because they're still going to get their $6. The question is,
who's going to pay for it?
Well, we will be paying for it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, on the current scenario at this point. And so I'd just like to see what budget that would be coming from and how much we'd actually be looking at in covering.
I can tell you, Mr. Chair, I can tell you that the bill would have, the cost would come from legislative administration for it. And that's the cost that's currently being worked on by Legislative Fiscal Office.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Representative Kitts?
What in fact, for clarification, would in fact we be paying for the parking, or would it just be an issuance of free? So would it be simply a loss of revenue, or would it be...
It would be revenue neutral to the city of Salem. It would be a cost to the state, so that if you had a constituent that wanted to come down and testify on a bill,
right,
and they went to the kiosk and asked for a parking pass and they gave the proof that's identified here,
right,
the kiosk could give them the parking pass at no cost.
At
normally it's a $6 cost. They could give it to them at no cost.
But would the state be paying? My question is, would the state incur the $6 cost?
Yes.
To give that, we couldn't just simply not. We couldn't simply have an exemption of existing. Are you following what I'm saying? We couldn't simply have, instead of giving them a $6 pass, we couldn't simply give them a testifier's pass. So there's no revenue loss. That's not an option.
Unless we're going to do something called a takings and basically take the revenue belongs to the city of Salem. That's the issue.
And,
I mean, someone's going to be paying for it unless the city came forward and said that we were going to not charge for those slots.
And from what they were saying in our first meeting, they weren't comfortable to do that. And so we, as a state, if we think it's important, and I guess the question is, from my perspective, if you have individuals who are actually driving a vehicle to the Capitol from wherever, is the $6 fee that they need to pay to have an all-day pass or putting in the quarters, is that a burden that's going to keep individuals from driving their vehicle here? I mean, the cost for operating a car, I didn't get AAA's numbers, but I assume we're talking for tax purposes on business, what, 36, 37 cents a mile is what you can claim.
It's 36.5 that you can reimburse yourself. I
all right.
Didn't know that.
You must have been in your taxes this weekend. So 36.5, and the question is,
I remember that.
is this a burden that keeps individuals from being able to actually come to the Capitol? And I'm not convinced that it is. And I think the burden of us paying the $6 fee to the city of Salem is something that we should consider before we move it to the floor.
Okay. Patrick, you had...
Yes, I could also add, Mr. Bennett from the city of Salem also indicated that the current way of doing it is, in fact, legislative administration pays the city of Salem for a block of the day passes, and then is reimbursed when people buy those passes from legislative administration. Currently, Mr. Bennett indicated that if the amended bill becomes law, that the city could arrange for providing some sort of a bulk discount, sell them at less than $5 to legislative administration to help mitigate their cost. LAC would still sell them to $6. Presumably, or maybe at face value, but would end up paying less than $6 per permit, possibly. That something like that could be worked out between the city and the state.
Okay,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kitts.
I would, for the record, like to state that I would like to see some form. I would support the bill as amended, but I'd like to see some form of a compromise reached where the taxpayers aren't simply bearing the brunt of testifiers who come down before the legislature, but I'd like to see the city work out some agreement in this. I think it's entirely possible that they do so. So with those reservations noted, I would still support the -1 amendment.
Okay. Okay. Let's see.
The -1s are not actually in the bill yet, correct?
We're in discussion.
And I think your comments are well taken, Representative, with regards to this. I agree in some respects with Representative Przanski from the standpoint I'm not sure how much of a barrier parking does really play in terms of keeping people away, but I think that we need to remove whatever barriers there might be from people coming in and testifying on bills. And so with that, I do support the -1 amendment.
Chair,
yes.
I think maybe another option where it doesn't cost the city, or excuse me, the state as much. We do have free parking that people can be shuttled here. We do have a shuttle service that individuals can do, and many employees, interns who work here do that service. There's something that's already there that potentially could be used that would not cost the state any additional money than what's already within the infrastructure for providing access to the Capitol.
It's a good point. And maybe in terms of when we have public information that's put out to the general public about testifying, that type of information should be included. So that
my office does that. I mean, in the sense of when we have people coming up, we give them as many options as we can as to what availability of the parking close by, mm-hmm. City lots, as well as the, depending on their timing, the shuttle service.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Okay. It's been moved to put the -1 amendments into House Bill 2417. Are there any objections?
Chair.
Okay. Let the record show that Representative Przanski objects to the -1 amendments to House Bill 2417. Any other objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2417 is amended.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House Bill 2417, as amended, move to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2417 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Representative Mabry?
I would just say that I truly doubt. I've been coming down here for 12, 15 years from time to time. I was not aware until this year that there were parking passes available. Most people won't. Most people that come down here to testify at this meeting will feed a couple hours into the meter and go home. I don't think this is going to have many real dollar impact. I think the city will continue to get a lot of revenue off of those meters just because it's easier that way. So for whatever that's worth.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I would be able to vote on this because I think Representative Mabry actually brings back the point that I keep on coming to. We're either going to have a means for people that have this information so they know the service is available, or you're going to have the individuals that are in the know, basically, who may be here on a daily basis because they just like to be part of the process, who will be, let's say, potentially utilizing that services. And the question is, are we here to basically subsidize whoever as compared to making sure there's access? And I think there's many other ways that we have access available without the state at this point taking on these additional costs, which at this point, the reason I'm voting no is because I don't know what those costs are. Once I have that number, I may feel more comfortable based on what Representative Mabry says. It may not be much to be considered, but until I see the financials, I think it's too hasty to move forward without that information. So okay. I'll be voting no for those reasons.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Chair, I would be voting the same way.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Kitts?
Mr. Chair, I would, the objections I think are good. Not great. But I would also like to just state for the record that I do have concerns that we, and I think it's a show of good faith, Mr. Chair, that we do remove any barrier for the public to be able to come and testify. And whether that's allowing them the use of the shuttle, or whether that's allowing them free parking, whatever the case may be, my only concerns are the abuse of the free parking passes by the same people that Representative Przanski has expressed. And with that being said, I will support the bill for the same reasons that Mr. Przanski will oppose the bill.
Yep. Thank you. We have had a very lively and spirited and respectful debate here, and I appreciate that. Are there any other comments? Seeing none, Gina, call the roll, please.
No.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
No.
Excused. Aye. House Bill 2417, having received the majority, is declared passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2417. And let's see, shall we ask Representative Close if she'd like to carry her own bill?
Yeah.
So let's do that. Ask Representative Close. We'll have Representative Close carry this bill. And since we don't have anything else on our agenda, we are adjourned. And thank you, committee, for your indulgence. And look forward to more of our meetings lasting until 10:30.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.